Big Picture. Derek Gary and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-WMFO is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. Lock that into your phone. Give us a call later. You may want to chime in. We're going to be taking a look at what happened out in Oakland later tonight. 855-915-WMFO. That is our telephone number. Lisa Nichols.
Hi.
We're doing like the whole regular show tonight, which we haven't done in weeks. It has been weeks since we've, it seems like forever since we've...
I know, it does.
No election to talk about.
Especially where both you and I, where I was gone before the election, you were gone after the election, and then we had our Thanksgiving show, and we're back to normal.
And then last week, of course, we did the in-depth look at fake news.
Yes.
What's going on, how we can deal with it.
Me and PJ Weston come in and visit us once again.
Yeah, so... tonight, for at least one more time this year, we're going to do the regular format. You'll be hearing our favorite things from the past week, the strangest stories of the past week, and the news and all that other stuff. Yeah.
We had a great weekend.
We had an amazing weekend.
We spent it together.
Did you...
We also spent it with our loved ones mutually.
Well,
so yeah, we had a sort of foursome go out, and we saw Othello off Broadway, which had to be the best show I've ever seen.
Pretty damn impressive.
Yeah.
Pretty damn impressive. Daniel Craig and David Oyelowo both appearing in Othello.
And Derek got to shake the hand of Mr. Willem Dafoe.
And Mr. Oyelowo as well. So,
yes.
You know.
There's a great picture on your Facebook. We should put that on the Big Picture.
Yeah. Yeah, we should. We should, actually. We should just sort of run the, you know, me and celebrities. Yeah, it's like, they've never been on the show, but
no,
hey.
But it really was. It was a perfect weekend. We had unbelievable food before. We were running a little bit late. We made it just in time. Yeah. Thank God when we got there, there were a few people still in the lobby area. But
so you liked Bobby Vance?
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
The food was fantastic.
Did I not tell you that place had amazing food?
And, you know, I love risotto, and I'm very picky about my risotto. And Derek said, he's like, you need to get the mushroom risotto.
Yeah.
I was more concerned. I mean, I had a lobster tail and filet in front of me, and I was more concerned with that side dish. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
The place is as old as I am. So, and where they are in New York, you got to be doing something right to be there that long.
Mm-hmm.
And not only is the mushroom risotto spectacular, but that filet...
It's fantastic.
You can go into any restaurant and get a flavorless filet.
I love when I get meals served on a giant cutting board brought to the table and you slice it in front of me.
But
there's something just like, you know.
I took one bite of that filet and I said to myself, this is, and I gave some of it to Molly, and I said, before you taste this, understand that this is what filet mignon is supposed to taste like.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a... perfect example of the species.
Yes.
Just really, God, enjoyable. Very, very enjoyable. All right. We start tonight with history. And we will get to the news very shortly. But we are broadcasting on the 75th anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor, which brought a reluctant United States fully into World War II. You will hear one of the first radio broadcasts announcing the attack, and then the December 8th address of President Franklin Delano Roosevelt to a joint session of Congress asking for a declaration of war. This is WMFO in Medford.
Interrupt this program to bring you a special news bulletin. The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, by air, President Roosevelt has just announced. The attack also was made on all naval and military activities on the principal island of Oahu. We take you now to Washington.
The details are not available. They will be in a few minutes. The White House is now giving out a statement. The attack apparently was made on all naval and... on naval and military activities on the principal island of Oahu. The president's brief statement was read to reporters by Stephen Early, the president's secretary. A Japanese attack upon Pearl Harbor naturally would mean war. Such an attack would naturally bring a counterattack, and hostilities of this kind would naturally mean that the president would ask Congress for a declaration of war. There is no doubt from the temper of Congress that such a declaration would be granted. This morning, Secretary Hull talked with the Secretaries of War and of the Navy. Now the two special Japanese envoys, Admiral Nomura and Special Envoy Caruso, are at the State Department, engaged in conference with Secretary of State Hull. Their appearance at the State Department on this Sunday afternoon emphasizes the gravity of the Far Eastern situation, where hostilities now seem to be actually opening over the whole South Pacific. And just now comes the word from the President's office that a second air attack has been reported on Army and Navy bases in Manila. Thus, we have official announcements from the White House that Japanese airplanes have attacked Pearl Harbor in Hawaii and have now attacked Army and Navy bases in Manila. We return you now to New York and will give you later information as it comes along from the White House. We return you now to New York.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate and of the House of Representatives, yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. The attack yesterday on the Hawaiian Islands has caused severe damage to American naval and military forces. I regret to tell you that very many American lives have been lost. In addition, American ships have been reported torpedoed on the high seas between San Francisco and Honolulu. As Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, I have directed that all measures be taken for our defense, but always will our whole nation remember the character of the onslaught against us. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory. I believe that I interpret the will of the Congress and of the people when I assert that we will not only defend ourselves to the uttermost, but will make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never again endanger us. Hostilities exist. There is no blinking at the fact that our people, our territory, and our interests are in grave danger. With confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph, so help us God. I ask that the Congress declare that since the unprovoked and dastardly attack by Japan on Sunday, December 7th, 1941, a state of war has existed between the United States and the Japanese Empire.
There are few alive today who remember that day and the years that followed. Should you be fortunate enough to have someone in your life who was alive during World War II, take advantage of any chance you get to talk to them about it. Our history books paint in broad strokes what we remember in personal detail, and those details disappear with the loss of each generation. With those losses, we also risk forgetting the lessons learned. World War II was a chapter of American history that showed our determination and bravery, but also our tendency to overreact and punish the innocent. As we face the challenges of the 21st century, we should learn all that we can about our recent past to find new ways forward and hopefully to prevent unexpected attacks from happening. And we turn to the news. Lisa Nichols, what do we got going on in this great state of ours?
Today in local news, we learn the fight over money continues in the Commonwealth. Governor Charlie Baker said Tuesday that he is unilaterally slashing $98 million from the state budget to remedy what his administration says that it is a gap between projected revenue and authorized spending. Cuts will touch a wide range of government programs. They will include health care for the poor, suicide prevention, the state police crime laboratory, literacy programs, state parks, and the Bureau of Substance Abuse Services. But the total amount of spending will be axed is small compared to the $39 billion budget. The move immediately drew blowback from the Democratic-controlled legislature. House Speaker Robert A. DeLeo said the cuts are premature as tax revenues are on track with expectations. Quote, it seems that the administration is seeking to achieve policy objectives that have previously been rejected by the legislature through its unilateral cuts of 9C. DeLeo was referring to the section of the law that gives Governor Charlie Baker the authority to make cuts without lawmaker sign-off. Quote, recent revenue numbers indicated a need to be vigilant. They do not, however, need to necessitate cuts at this time, end quote. So, you know, this fiscal year, it comes at a time where the economy is slightly better than it has been in years. So we ask this question over and over again, and I know I've asked it to you so many times here on the show. Why does Massachusetts, when we are in this economic recovery of what the past like 6-7 years, why do we constantly careen from one budget gap to another?
Because
but officials are announcing, don't worry, the money's coming in, but it's not going to cover all of our expenses.
Because Beacon Hill is,
like, I'm just confused.
Beacon Hill is like your layabout uncle who is constantly showing up looking for another loan. And you give him the money, and then he goes and wastes it on something, and then he comes back looking for more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Beacon Hill is a place where money goes to die, and they are never satisfied. They always want
more.
That's
my question. Are they using it for wallpaper? I mean, is it just, you know, speckled with $100 bills? I'm at a loss because so many times we hear this over and over again, and especially where Massachusetts law demands a balanced budget.
Yes.
But then you have a Democratic-controlled legislature that's up on Beacon Hill that says, what, Baker, first 2 months into the fiscal year, he says, we need a balanced budget. They're like, oh, wait a minute, hold on, we're going too fast, let's play this out. Then he tries to do it again before the election. Whoa.
I believe
hold back. We need to wait until we get reelected to re-talk about this.
I believe I have already heard the cries of they're cutting programs for the children.
Yes.
From the Democrats up on Beacon Hill.
But it, you know.
That cry, that plaintive whale has already begun emanating from the dome.
And again, as I said, you know, we're talking about $98 million that are being cut from, you know, upwards of $39 billion.
As Governor Baker said today, it is less than 1% of the budget.
Yes.
That is being cut. Somehow, I think we're going to survive without that $98 million. Mm-hmm.
But of course, this is what your, you know, for the majority, your local media tells people, because this is what is coming from all the people squawking on Beacon Hill and saying, well, all the children are going to be, do you care about hungry kids, the poor? Do you care about them? Well, look what Governor Charlie Baker's doing. Oh, you know that like rampant epidemic that's sweeping the Commonwealth with heroin? Well, yeah, all of them are going to close. That's not true.
No, that's entirely not true.
Yes, the real question is, why do we constantly have this a problem? It's not that all these programs are going to be cut. They're going to be hurt just a little bit, but it's not.
We know why we have this problem. Pensions and health insurance.
Wait, you mean like the MBTA?
That's where the majority of our tax dollars are going.
Yes.
And if you could find some way to end the control that the Carmen's Union has over the MBTA, maybe you can get the pensions down. Then maybe maybe we don't have to take money away from the starving children.
Yes.
The starving children, by the way, are not going to lose any money. Mm-hmm. Nobody's taking money away from the starving children. The substance abuse thing, we're probably taking money away from that.
Now, what's interesting also, Baker announced today,
by the way,
that
we're taking that money away so that Sal DiLeo, recently released, formerly convicted Speaker of the House, can have his pension.
Mm-hmm.
He is, even though he made $250,000 last year, while he was in jail,
we got to pay him.
He is,
that money is rightfully his.
He is suing the state for his $33,000 a month pension with back payments.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So where is the Democrat?
But you know what it is. He's going to get the money.
Where is the Democrat outrage when a convicted, federally convicted former Speaker of the House is trying to shake down the state for his pension?
Oh, no, no.
Can't touch that. No. Can't touch these pensions.
Because
don't go near
that
the pensions.
Money is rightfully his, Derek.
Yeah. They will scream.
Somebody that screwed people out of hundreds of thousands of dollars here in the state. And I'm sure there's a lot more money that we don't know about. But he paid his dues.
Yeah, they will howl about the starving children until it touches something that affects them personally.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, it's not a problem.
Yeah, there's also outcry about, Baker announced today that upwards of 500 state employees have sought the buyout program, which has been offered. That was a program that he had, you know, started saying, we'll give you a certain amount of money, depending on how long you've been working for the state.
Yeah. Get out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, something's not good here. We're leaving. So you have 500 employees, but they're like, all the government employees are leaving. Ugh.
We probably didn't need those 500 employees.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't know how many jobs they got rid of.
But again, they still get their pensions. And if you know, and as anybody should, working for, but if you want to be have a really good pension, work for their MBTA or Massachusetts government.
Well, keep in mind too, depending on how that buyout program is structured, if your pension is based on your last year of employment, so if that gets added to your income for your last year of employment and is considered employment income, that's going to kick your pension up.
Mm-hmm. More money that we're spending.
I wish I had a pension. I really do. I wish I had a pension. I'd stop working. In national news, overseas corporate cash holdings may not be overseas, and the American people may be paying to help large corporations avoid taxes. An investigation by Bloomberg revealed a complex but legal tax dodge for some of the largest U.S.-based companies, including Apple and Google. The strategy involves parking profits in Ireland, then buying U.S. Treasury bonds that pay interest, a move authorized by the U.S. tax code in 1962. Ireland, a favored tax haven for multinationals, now holds $271 billion in U.S. government bonds, and the Treasury has paid more than $1.4 billion to large multinationals since 2012, including $590 million to Apple, $430 million to Cisco Systems, $160 million to Johnson & Johnson, and $150 million to Google.
Oh, good. I'm so glad my federal tax dollars are going to good work. But again, we asked the question just moments ago, what is happening in here in the Commonwealth? And wondering, we're putting out all this money, we're paying taxes, where is it going? Again, this is what's happening in the United States. And unfortunately, the people that reap the benefits of it are that 1%, are these major corporations. And this is something that Donald Trump, you know, did during his election and talk about this and saying, I don't understand where a company that is technically based here in the United States, that is making millions and billions of dollars, but then over sending it overseas so that it can be in some sort of tax haven and then not get taxed here.
The best part of this whole scheme is if you turn around and sell the bonds, the money goes back into Ireland. Mm-hmm. So it's still considered overseas cash. And Bloomberg, I encourage anybody to read this because Bloomberg did a very lengthy, in-depth takedown of this. They're actually running all of this out of an office in Reno, Nevada, because there are no corporate taxes in Reno. So they can conduct these transactions, basically buying U.S. government bonds with Irish money without, or with money they've got parked in Ireland, without ever incurring a dime of tax penalty. The money itself is actually sitting in U.S. banks, mm-hmm. but for tax and accounting purposes, is considered to be overseas. This has to go. This has to go.
Now, because, do you think this is going to be something that's going to change with this new administration coming in?
Because not only are these companies not paying taxes, we're paying them.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get the American taxpayer?
Cumulatively speaking, how many billions of dollars do you think that we're talking about that are being missed in tax revenue?
Well,
here in the United States,
who knows? But I mean,
the figure is probably disgusting. That
look, there's $271 billion in U.S. government bonds owned by Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
Ireland has 10 million people. Okay. That's like China level ownership of U.S. government bonds. There is no way that the Irish own all of these.
But for so long, this is continually going on.
Yeah.
And we saw, what was it last year? That was working out of the Maldives or something. It was a huge
Mossack Fonseca.
Yes. And how, you know, so many of these large corporations here in the United States were using these ways because there's so many ways that you can go around, unfortunately, government law to bring in money or to put out money.
For the last 18 or so years, Republicans and Democrats alike have looked the other way while the biggest U.S. technology companies have exploited every loophole in the world to make money. And they've looked the other way because they've been paid to look the other way.
I was going
to
say, half the money is going into Washington and special interest groups,
yeah.
Lobbyists and whatnot.
Exactly. These companies have bought the ignorance of the United States government. This is something Donald Trump needs to fix. This is something that he ran on. Okay. Apple has more than $250 billion in cash. I think the number is actually $258. $258 billion in cash. Cash. That it is not using. $258 billion in capital that is just sitting there because it makes more sense for their shareholders and for the overall health of their company to hide it somewhere overseas, buy U.S. government bonds, and then collect interest payments on those bonds.
I'm just picturing,
and
like,
in the Bloomberg article, somebody brings up that point,
mm-hmm.
that this may not be the most moral thing that you can think of, but in terms of fiduciary responsibility, this is what accountants have to do, because Wall Street will eat you alive if you don't do this.
Of course, because now it is corporate culture and it's the norm. Unfortunately, that is what is going on here in the United States. No, but I'm just picturing like this giant vault at Apple, just filled with money, like Scrooge McDuck swimming in it.
Yeah.
And everybody, like, you know, during break time and lunchtime, everybody's just swimming in this giant vault of cash.
Now, this money,
while millions of Americans are struggling to put food on the table.
This money does get used. You know, these government bonds are what pay for highways, bridges, dams, government buildings, all sorts of infrastructure. So it's not like the money is completely going to waste, but this is money that these companies have earned from American consumers, and then they invest it tax-free in the United States, and then the American people pay them for this privilege. So when I say that Apple got $590 million over the last 4 years, you paid that. Lisa Nichols paid that.
Oh, good.
I paid that. That's where our tax money is going. Our tax money is going.
But one would assume when you're paying, you know, writing your check every year for federal taxes, that it is going to the government to use for the country.
Seems to me I should.
But no. Apple's using it. Google's using it. Cisco's using it.
Seems to me we should be getting some free iPhones out of this. Right?
I mean, what? Cost me $1,000 every time I want to upgrade a phone?
Yeah.
I'll make it a little more affordable. My tax dollars are paying for it, so might as well. I just don't. That blows my mind, Derek. And that is why I have hope for this next administration coming in and saying, like, if you're going to run your campaign on that and talk about, yes, I was in the business, I understand how all of this works. Everybody knocks on Donald Trump for being somebody, a businessman. He gets this. He's seen it. Now he doesn't agree with it.
He's going to
put a stop to it, I hope.
The problem is that Republicans have generally been favorable to this sort of behavior. And generally...
And exactly like you just said, turn your head.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to push back? Sure.
And Donald Trump is...
I'll vote this way.
Donald Trump is going to have to fight with Congress to get these changes in that he wants. But Donald Trump, the one good thing about him coming in as president... is he does not look at the United States as a politician. He looks at the United States as a businessman and looks at the federal government as a business with a balance sheet. And he does not like what he sees in the balance sheet. The American people don't like what they see in the balance sheet. And we shouldn't. This is insane. Okay? Companies that are making money hand over fist like Apple should be paying taxes hand over fist because that's the way the system works.
Mm-hmm.
The system works, does not exist to let... Apple Computer stashed $250 billion in cash somewhere. When you take all of that money out of the system, that's lost jobs. That is a lower standard of living for the American people. That is the sort of thing that happens in third world countries like Brazil, where you have corrupt governments funneling all of the business to their friends and then stealing money off the top. And we talk about income inequality in this country. We talk about our crumbling infrastructure. It is the corporations that are doing this to us. And the government is the only bulwark that we have against that behavior.
And to protect us from it.
Yeah. This is
But also to persecute for it.
This is why Donald Trump got elected. This is what the American people want. The American people, I don't care how liberal you are. I understand that you're upset about, you know, the social issues and that side of things. But you still have to look at this and be appalled.
No, absolutely. No liberal can honestly stand there and say that they would agree with this. I mean, this is just basic fundamentals of right and wrong.
All you have to do is keep Donald Trump busy with the economy long enough, and he won't be able to take the rights away from everybody else. It's that simple. It's all you got to do.
Well, I mean, understanding what Bloomberg is putting out, I think we have enough problems.
This is WMFO Medford. In world news, if the days seem longer, it's because they are. Lisa Nichols. British researchers have discovered that the Earth's rotation is slowing at a rate of approximately 1.8 milliseconds per century, or 1 minute per 2.6 million years. The researchers used observations of solar eclipses and where they were visible on Earth from ancient texts to map the changes, noting variations in where and when solar eclipses should have been seen based on historical observations. The slowing of Earth's rotation requires high-precision clocks to be reset every few years to maintain their accuracy.
Yeah, I mean, how many times do you wish there was just one more hour of the day?
Yep.
So you're like, if there was only 24 hours in a day, what I could do with it, your wish has been granted. I mean, unfortunately, we're not going to see that in our lifetime. But, you know, how many years are they projecting it that it would add an extra day?
It takes 2.6 million years to get a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're dealing with some big numbers to get an extra day in there. But the planet is slowing down a little bit. And there are a lot of things that, that weigh on that. Ice pack, proximity of the moon, electromagnetic fields being shot out of the sun. There's a lot of things that do it. And one of the interesting things is they actually found that the rotation of the Earth is slowing by a slightly smaller amount than previously thought.
Mm-hmm.
They used to think it was 2.3 milliseconds every 100 years. Now they believe it's 1.8.
So essentially, Earth is just getting lazier.
Yeah. But the way they figured this out is kind of ingenious, because they looked at ancient Egyptian observations and as many old texts as they could find to see when and where an eclipse was recorded. Now, based on what we know about the movement of the sun of the Earth, if you know when one eclipse or a couple of eclipses were spotted, you can start projecting where the next ones were and where they should have been seen. And if they're not there, then you can figure out how off those that distance and that period of time is, and you can figure out how much the Earth has slowed down. Clever folks, these scientists.
Very interesting. Well, in sports news, Red Sox land the ace that they've been looking for. Chris Sale will be pitching for the Red Sox for the Sox next season, but in Boston rather than Chicago, after the ace left-hander was traded to the Red Sox, the teams announced Tuesday. Quote, "The ability to get a Chris Sale doesn't come along very often," end quote. Boston President of Baseball Operations Dave Dombrowski said. The White Sox will receive highly touted infield prospect Yoan Moncada, pitching prospect Michael Kopech, and minor leaguers Luis Alexander Basabe and Victor Diaz. Quote, "When you trade a pitcher of Chris Sale's ability, it can only be because we were motivated by an impactful return of young talent, and we were more than accomplished that. We believe that each of those players can be part of a quality core of future championship caliber White Sox teams," said White Sox general manager Rick Hahn. Dombrowski said that the trade talks between the two sides began in earnest last Friday after baseball's new labor deal was reached, when and they heated up from there. Sale, 27, is coming off of his fifth straight All-Star season in 2016, when he finished 17-10 with 233 strikeouts and 226 half innings pitched. So, if all goes to plan, we have Sale, David Price, Porcello, Clay Buchholz, and Rodriguez. That's a pretty nasty 1-5 lineup.
So we have one pitcher and no hitting, is what you're saying? that's where we're at for the 2017 season. One pitcher and no hitting.
That is what I'm getting to. So, you know, I really liked Moncada, and I hope that this will be our year where we do get... Now, I'm not saying that Sale's going to be our young ace that we got from, like, Clemens or...
No, he's not a young ace. He's...
27.
He's a somewhat experienced ace.
Yeah, but... Or even a Pedro.
Yep.
But still, I mean, this is huge. But again, you just made the perfect point that I was going to say. We have a very big problem with hitting, and and it's not, yes, sometimes it's, you know, bats are lighted up, but the reality is we have a major loss to the team, that being David Ortiz retiring this past
year. Well, allegedly we get Sandoval back at third base next season if he's healthy. That should help.
I do have to say, have you seen some of the pictures of him?
Yeah, I know.
From last year to this year. Good for him, absolutely, but losing that many pounds, but the problem is, again, it's very difficult to play here in Fenway. And we've seen many players that have come in, were supposed to have the big lights behind them and be the all-stars, and then it's a major flop and a huge loss of money for the Red Sox.
I wonder if they're not looking at Sandoval possibly as the new designated hitter.
That's what I'm thinking.
That's a very real possibility. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's be honest, like the young kids... Benintendi
who is phenomenal past year.
Mookie Betts.
I mean, I remember seeing him, you know, in Portland, AAA, and I'm like, keep an eye on this kid. He is going to be huge. They brought him up. He was running the playoffs going into it.
Yeah. So there was a pretty consistent batting coming out of the Red Sox. Not anybody who, other than Poppy, who was like superstar whacking it out of the park all season long.
No, and for the most people, for the most part, most teams and most players, you know, lose it in the second half of the, you know, you come into the All-Star week. After that, many teams start sliding.
Yeah.
Luckily for us, the Red Sox started going up. That's where we started seeing bats, you know, cracking. But it needs to be consistent. And you do not have in that lineup, start to finish, a consistent batting. So we'll see. My big problem is, though, missing Ortiz.
Yeah. You know, Ortiz is definitely a big loss. And, you know, it's going to be difficult to... It's going to be very difficult to fill that role.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the kind of really aggressive move that the fans like to see. You know, because you came close last year.
But you came with the package.
You came within a whisker last year. And you lost to the team that made it to the World mm-hmm. Series. And you lost one of the franchise players, one of the marquee players for the team. You want to see this kind of a big aggressive move because that tells the fans, look, we're still serious about winning, and we're still serious about winning now.
And I don't think, you know, baseball operations here in Boston would ever stray from that. I mean, it's obviously the championship is the goal in mind. But for the past few years, we've been seeing these blockbuster trades that have been coming out. And we have such high hopes as fans. And it's, you know, things through my whole lifetime and so many people, you know, older than me have seen it.
But there was
especially in the past few years, how many millions of dollars we spent, and it's been a giant letdown.
Well, it goes back
to... I can rattle off a number of players that you're just like, ugh. Sandoval being one of the biggest ones last year.
It goes back to that pitcher we got from Japan, whose name I've already forgotten. The one that we paid all the money for.
Oh, Daisuke?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Daisuke Matsuzaka, where we paid $50 million
just to talk to the guy.
Yeah. That was the first sign that the Red Sox ownership was actually committed to building good teams. If you're going to play around in the big numbers, you're going to get anybody's going to get hits and misses.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
No, and I do. I have a lot of insider information that comes out of that camp. There is a lot of tensions with the owners. Not only the owners, but inside operations. And I hate to say it, like, I miss how it used to be. Where it was, you know... Pretty much, Henry was silent. And
but what it used to be was, we'll get some beaten-up veteran for cheap money and hope that he holds together for a season.
Yeah, we got lucky.
And that and a farm system mm-hmm. were the only things that kept the Red Sox competitive, okay? Here's the reality. We're not Pittsburgh, okay? We're not some small-market team in the middle of nowhere that can throw out, you know, a bunch of young guys, hope for the best, mm-hmm. and know that you're still going to sell tickets because there's nothing else going on in town at that time of year. If you want that team to make money, if you want that team to be competitive in Boston, where the expectations are through the roof now, you've got to be putting quality talent on that field at the start of every season.
No, but
and
I
this
think
is a
even
move
though
toward
if,
that.
Even though if we have a mediocre team put together, we're doing average, we're staying still up in the standings, you are going to sell out every game. What was it, a couple years ago? I mean, you couldn't even give tickets away because we were doing so poorly. And I'm saying, like, there wasn't even a glimmer of hope to win a game.
And it's not like we were doing poorly with bad players either.
But we have a stadium that only seats like 15,000 people. So people are like, oh, it's sold out all the time. You know, how does Boston do it? Most stadiums have, you know, 70,000 seats. Go to Yankee Stadium. They're still selling out and they are triple the size.
But because it's a smaller stadium, they have to sell it out every single game.
Of course they do.
That's what makes the business model work.
And sell the 10-50, you know, a beer.
Otherwise, you're taking a bath on operating the team.
Mm-hmm.
The Red Sox can actually lose money very easily if they don't have the right product on the field. And what happened a couple of years ago, you're right, you know, the team was so bad, you couldn't give the tickets away.
And it wasn't that, I mean, overall, you still had standouts. It was just team morale. Everything was down. It just was hands up, don't care.
The team can withstand a year of that. But you get 2 years of that, you get 3 years mm-hmm. of that, suddenly we turn into the Minnesota Twins,
mm-hmm.
where it's like you can't afford anything anymore, and the team just goes straight down the toilet until somebody else comes in and buys it. So, We'll see. That's the game we're in.
Let's hope. Well, in food news this winter, many will have to forgo foie. With weeks before Christmas, it means the height of foie gras season in France. Unfortunately, thousands of ducks and geese had to be slaughtered prematurely due to an outbreak of a particularly virulent strand of bird flu. According to a decree issued by the French Ministry to Agriculture earlier this week, farmers are being asked to prevent contact between wild birds and commercial poultry. And there's a ban on any gathering of live poultry, especially in these markets, and a new set of hunting restrictions that prevent the release of mallards throughout the country. The latest case of avian flu in northern France was detected last month. The Guardian reported that the virus was imported by wild ducks traveling across Europe. Last year's flu outbreak cost regional producers 500 million euros, and so far this year, 7,000 contaminated ducks have been slaughtered and 4,500 have died from the illness. So this is a current outbreak of HGN-8, the avian flu. So it's spread across Europe so far. The countries that are reporting it, France, Netherlands, Germany, Hungary, Croatia, and Switzerland, this is something. And I think here in the United States, I mean, I'm a huge fan of foie gras, but this is something that is a staple, especially around the holidays in these regions. So not only are you dealing with something that very much affects farmers and the producers, but it affects restaurants. It affects how people eat, because I don't even know how to do a comparison from foie gras, what it is in those countries to here. Maybe what's something though you don't get all the time, like a really nice, like hen or like a really nice chicken or something that is so common to have around the holidays, a ham.
Yeah.
So, I mean, pretty much every household is having this, and now it is being affected. The amount of money that is being lost from these producers, and we've talked about it before on the show, especially when we're talking about whether it's olive oil in, you know, Italy or cheese in France, how so many of these local producers are going out of business because now these major supermarkets are bringing in what they consider, you know, imported cheeses like Brie's and whatnot. And you can see it now. You can get foie in many supermarkets. I mean, not your average grocery store, but something that specializes.
It's not good foie, but it's foie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, many people are going to be hurt by this, and it's not just a Lisa Foodie article coming up. Yeah. But yeah, this is one of my favorite foods, so this sparked my interest.
So be prepared to pay an arm and a leg for your foie gras this holiday season is what that comes down to. And I mean, this will persist into most of next year.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, maybe by this time next year, the foie gras situation will be back under control.
Yeah, couple of my good friends are up in Portland the past couple of days, which is, of course, my boyfriend and I's favorite city. And just seeing their pictures of the foie gras, I had, foie FOMO.
Yeah.
Sad.
No foie for you. In technology news, crowdfunding as a business model took a major hit this week as smartwatch maker Pebble announced it will not ship its Pebble 2, Time 2, Core, or Round watches following a partial acquisition of the company's assets by Fitbit. Product support has also been ended effective today. The company was a breakout star on Kickstarter and had raised $12.8 million for its new products. That money will now be refunded, but those who paid in advance for the watches could be waiting until March to get their refunds.
We were just saying during the Black Friday, the Thanksgiving special and talking about the Black Friday specials, how watches apparently are making a comeback.
Yeah. Well, the Pebble was the original smartwatch. This thing came out before Apple Watch, and these guys were...
What are the special features of Pebble?
It could... You could send emails from it. You could do a bunch of different things with it. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of a darling of, you know, the...
And it works off of Wi-Fi?
Yeah. The hipster techie crowd got into it. You didn't need an Apple Watch to make it work. It was all self-contained, which is one of the great things about it. But they never actually started a business out of it. You know, Pebble from the beginning has existed as something that happened on Kickstarter and grew from something that happened on Kickstarter. They never got traditional venture capital, and they never set up a business model similar to an Apple or a Samsung or any other product manufacturer. So when they ran into a need for growth capital, in comes Fitbit and says, well, we like your engineers and we like your QA team, but we are not in the watch business. So we're going to buy those people and throw the rest away.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the best deal that they could get.
No, and I mean, there is a huge market for it. Again, one of the biggest sellers for this Christmas is the Fitbit and Apple Watch and being able to do everything just from your wrist. And there's especially a huge market within the fitness and health industry and being able to track heart rate and your endurance and whatnot. Right.
But this is, I mean, this in my eyes is a big, big, big strike against this crowdfunding business.
And you said what? 13? How much?
$12.8 million.
$12.8 million.
Which they've been sitting on for months, by the way.
Yeah.
This is not a legitimate business model. Going on the internet and begging for cash to make your product. And there are people doing this all over the place now.
Of course. People
are trying to crowdfund movies, and they're trying to crowdfund their screenplays, and they're trying to crowdfund their 3D printer and their video game console.
Because
or their
the thing
video
is,
game.
People see other people doing it and say, why not give it a chance?
A certain percentage of these products never even come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally you get somebody who disappears with the money. There's no turnaround promised. And it's understandable that once in a while, there may be an organization that needs a little capital to do a product, to do a project or a product that you're just not going to get mainstream financing for. Crowdfunding is good for that. If you're Pebble, if you are a major manufacturer, at some point, you got to stop acting like a bunch of internet kiddies and go set up a real business.
Mm-hmm. Exactly like you just said, you can't design a business concept and a business model off of crowdsurfing.
Yeah. This is like, oh, we're going to tell you what the product is, you're going to pay us for it, and then you'll get it when we make it. That's not how business works.
Mm-hmm.
You come to the marketplace with a product that is ready to sell. You don't come to the marketplace and say, hey, give me some money and I'll make this. There is a reason why business has operated the way that it has for, well, about 2 millennia now. We're coming up on, we're a little over 2 millennia of business that we know of operating in a certain way without somebody standing in the crowd square saying, give me $10 and I'll make some baseball cards. So everybody,
that's not how it works.
No, and I don't go anywhere near it. I do not like the crowdfunding model. I think it needs to be done away with, and we need to get back to traditional methods of financing and growing businesses. It's that simple. Maybe it's not. I don't know. I'm not a bearded hipster anymore.
You are bearded.
I'm not even bearded anymore.
A little bit. No. You have your Birkenstocks on.
There's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Winter has arrived a little bit ahead of schedule this year,
since
kids. Although, I think we can make the argument
together.
That December is usually when it gets cold, and hoo boy, is it going to get cold. We got one of them Arctic fronts coming our way. Nobody likes the Arctic front. But for now, we're only going to drop into the mid-30s tonight. Enjoy that. It's going to feel balmy compared to the next few days. Clouds tomorrow, high in the mid-40s, lows below freezing tomorrow night. Watch out for ice. Friday, it will be a mostly sunny day, but the temperature is not going to rise above the mid-30s. Friday night, temperatures fall back into the teens in most places. Lower 20s downtown Boston. And then Saturday, when you wake up, it is going to be in the teens. We will struggle to get above freezing on Saturday. And then again, Saturday night, temperatures fall back into the teens. Sunday, same deal. Highs in the mid-30s, lows a little bit warmer on Sunday night, right around freezing, with some precipitation moving in. Keep your eyes out for some snow Sunday night.
Wasn't that word banned from the show?
That is the word snow. Snow late Sunday night into Monday, just in time to start the commute.
Yeah.
So,
just like we woke up this Monday with snow.
Yeah. So for the daylight hours, clear weekend, dry weekend, but
yeah,
cold,
freezing.
Cold,
my face
cold
already
weekend.
Hurts.
If you're going to that Patriots game on Monday night, wear a sweater. Wear a second sweater. Wear a thermal shirt. Wear gloves. Get some of those
cover
hand warmers.
Every part of your body.
Put on a scarf, some earmuffs, a hat, something else, and put your jersey on over that. And you might be warm enough to get through the game. When we come back, it will be Did You Hear? All of the other things that caught our attention this week right here on WMFO Medford.
This is Sarah Beck for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Slow cooking, whether on your stovetop or in a slow cooker, can make the economical cuts of meat taste delicious. Less tender cuts like bottom round and brisket taste best if cooked in moist heat, so they're ideal for slow cooking. Since these cuts usually give you the most meat for your money, you can have economy and good taste. For more information, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, 20250.
Hello, I'm Leonard Nimoy. If you're like me, now that the holidays are over, you're probably trying to get things back to normal. But even though things did get a bit hectic, I hope you remembered to answer your Christmas seal letter. If you've overlooked it, remember, the fight against emphysema, tuberculosis, and the growing pollution of the air we breathe, all of these must go on all year round. It's not too late to sit right down and answer your Christmas seal letter today. It's a matter of life and breath.
This is the sound of salmonella gyrating on your undercooked chicken. And it looks like Mom might be taking it out a little early. Don't let salmonella get funky with your chicken. On average, 1 in 6 Americans will get a foodborne illness this year. So use a thermometer to cook each type of meat to the right temperature. Keep your family safe at foodsafety.gov. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
To the Big Picture on WMFO 91.5 Medford. I am Lisa Nichols with Derek Gary here with you always Wednesday night 7 to 9. And we want you to be a part of the show. The way that you do that, you give us a call at 855-915-9636. That's 855-915-WMFO. And of course, because we are back to normal programming, it's time for Did You Hear? The segment of the show where Derek and I quiz each other from little bits of this week's news. We give each other, you know, one or two words, and we have to tell what the story is about. And I will start. Princess Cruise Lines.
Princess Cruise Lines has been approved, along with one other cruise line. I can't remember which one it was. I think it's Viking, possibly. To begin cruises to sunny Cuba.
That is actually not the big story today.
That's the one that was making the business headlines tonight.
Well, today we found out that they will pay $40 million fine for deliberate pollution of the seas and intentional acts to cover it up. This is what the Department of Justice is calling the largest ever criminal penalty involving deliberate vessel pollution. So I think that's a little bit bigger. Now, the California-based cruise operator, they also agreed to plead guilty to 7 felony charges over illegal practices on 5 ships, dating one that we at least know was back in 2005. The Justice Department said in a statement that Princess illegally dumped contaminated waste and oil from its Caribbean Princess ships for 8 years, a practice that was exposed by a whistleblower engineer in 2013. So this is a case that they've been building, and $40 million. That's a big chunk.
I heard something about a fine. But there was also the story about, hey, everybody can go to Cuba now.
Oh, good.
So both of those...
Cuba's actually beautiful.
Yeah, it's not surprising that both of those stories broke today. Because one is, you know, one is, hey, you guys have been dumping poo in the sea. Mm-hmm. You're bad people. But we're going to give you a little PR cover here. You get to go to Cuba.
Yay.
And I don't know if we're going to be upset. I don't know if the U.S. government is upset if they dump the poo in the Bay of Pigs.
Yeah.
There's a point that I will make about that. All right, let me throw you a softball here. Air Force One.
Ooh, Air Force One is in rough shape. So Donald Trump said to Boeing, who has been working on a new, two new planes, actually, for Air Force One.
There's actually two of them now, and they're building two more.
Trump says, hold on. We're talking about, I believe it's $4 billion that it is, and Boeing saying, no, we're just doing the markups of it and drawing it out. We don't know.
Doing $178 million worth of design work on it currently.
Yes. Yeah. So he said, I'm sure there's a better way that we can do. But the government went to Boeing, I believe it was last year or 2 years ago, and said, it's costing us so much money to put all this work into both of the Air Force Ones. We want something that is stronger, faster, and they want to fly it in 2020s.
Well, the two current Air Force Ones are the only 747 passenger jets still in operation. They were built in 1984, so they've got more than 25 years on them. That's typically your lifespan for an airplane. Mm-hmm. After 25 years, those are exceptionally well maintained, and they've been upgraded several times over the years, but feeling is we need new ones. Donald Trump doesn't like the cost. And I don't blame him for not. The projected cost for the two planes is $3 billion. With overruns, it could get up as high as $4 billion. I don't know how much an airplane costs, but I'm going to guess, typically, less than $1.5 billion for an airplane. All right. And Donald Trump has bought an airplane, so he would know what an airplane costs. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure a very luxurious airplane.
I love this quote from President-elect the Donald in his lobby in New York yesterday. "Quote: I want Boeing to make money, but not that much money."
Yep, that's your president, President-elect. All right, Angela Merkel.
Angela Merkel has, in a desperate bid to curry favor with Germany's voters, has announced that she will support a burqa ban on behalf of her German Christian Democrat Union Party.
Yes.
She was reelected as the leader of the party yesterday, unopposed. Mm-hmm. Got about 89.7% of the vote. So she is in good standing with them. Not so much with the German people.
Yeah. Because, of course, we're talking about over the past year, over a million migrants and refugees have come into the wide open doors that Merkel has opened to them, much to the disappointment and anger to people that live in Germany.
Sheriff Newell Normand.
Is that the sheriff from Standing Rock?
No.
Sheriff? What is it again?
Sheriff Newell Normand.
The officer in the case in South Carolina. I don't know.
Nope. I couldn't give you his full title because it'd be a dead giveaway.
Well, what was the full title?
Jefferson Parish Sheriff Newell Normand.
Okay.
Do you know where we are now?
I think so.
Had a press conference yesterday following the arrest of Ronald Gasser in the road rage shooting of ex-NFL player Joe McKnight.
Yes.
Last Thursday. And basically laid out the details of what they've found. Mr. Gasser and Mr. McKnight were both chipping at each other on the road. It was an extended road rage incident. And at the end of it, Mr. McKnight got out of his car, went over to Mr. Gasser's car and had some words with him, at which point Mr. Gasser pulled out a gun and shot Mr. McKnight three times. That isn't necessarily the story. The story behind this is that Mr. Gasser, who stayed at the scene, was not arrested immediately. They let him go home. And there was immediate outrage from people all over the place. And Sheriff Newell Normand spent a good portion of his press conference yesterday tearing a new one for all of those who were critical of his department and the leaders that he worked with. He said at one point, quote, and language warning, "It's not fair for him to be called, you punk-ass Uncle Tom Coon. We saw you sell out to them, you rat-ass faggot punk. That's the tone of what we call our elected leaders for standing up and saying, let justice prevail and let the process take its course. At that point, MSNBC cut their live coverage.
I was going to say, how many expletives in were they like,
that's commercial. Not even the worst of what he said. He was basically reading social media comments that were directed at his officers, at church leaders who supported his decision, and at others. And to say that Sheriff Newell...